Once upon a midnight weary, artists of Iowa discovered something quite dreary. In a pandemic year, an evil villain is out to steal the holiday cheer.
No live entertainment? Get out! No way! I'll save it myself if I have to. I'll do it today.
Join Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 and XBK for The Holiday Special, an original musical for a pandemic year, at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. For the first time in 3 years, people who were brought to the U.S. as young children can apply for a program that would give them protected status. Just a few days ago, a federal court ordered the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to begin accepting new applications for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, otherwise known as DACA. In the U.S., there are more than 600,000 DACA recipients currently, about 2,500 here in Iowa, according to the American Immigration Council. Today, we focus on what that latest court ruling means for Iowa Dreamers, as they're known. DACA and the future of immigration policy under a Biden administration. In just a couple of minutes, we'll hear from Iowa Dreamers. Later in the program, Joe Enriquez Henry, the state political director with the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, joins us as well. We'd like to hear from you this hour. Are you someone who was brought to this country as a child and have sought protection from deportation under DACA? We want to hear from you this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. How does the latest court order and the full reinstatement of DACA change your life, change your family? We want to hear from you. 1-866-780-9100. Cassidy Arena joins me now, IPR reporter. She focuses on Iowa's Latino community for us. Cassidy Arena, welcome back to our program.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for at least, well, virtually having me.
You're fully embedded in the program for the full hour. Cassidy Arena, glad to have you on with us as we talk with various guests throughout the hour. Let's start off with having you explain a little bit about the developments in the recent months and weeks. Walk us quickly from DACA's origins through the recent legal decisions that bring us where we are today. Now, we know that DACA began as an executive order by the Obama administration in 2012, protecting, as I said, over 600,000 young people from deportation. Walk us through what happened after that during the Trump administration.
Yeah, so first, let me just start with, if anybody is confused by any of this, completely understandable, because there's a lot of history here that we all are trying to keep up with constantly, it seems like. So
Right. You're
absolutely right. It started out with the Obama administration, and then during the Trump administration, it kind of hit a roadblock. So the Trump administration was wanting to end DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. But this summer, the Supreme Court actually blocked that attempt. So since then we had kind of another little roadblock when the acting secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, he also tried to make some changes to DACA, essentially saying that instead of a 2-year temporary protected status, it would only be 1 year. And then it also blocked any new applications. Since then, as of just a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago at this point, a U.S. District Court actually said, you know what, nope, you can't do that. First of all, we're going to make DACA back to the original status, which was under the Obama administration, so it has to follow the same rules as it did then. And right now, we're kind of in this limbo where that decision can still be appealed. But as of right now, the Department of Homeland Security does need to accept new applications. And also, those applications are for the original 2-year protected status. Mm-hmm. Tried to sum up all of that in a very limited summary.
that makes perfect sense. You walked us through that very well, Cassidy. So I guess what we're wondering, well, all these twists and turns in DACA over the past few years, is this latest court ruling by this Eastern District of New York judge, the final word? What is the sense there?
You know, it is actually not the final word. That's the magic of courts, as I guess you could say. So even though one court decision was made, there is still time to appeal that decision. And there's actually kind of talks and works going on right now out of Texas to appeal that decision. And those will be going on later this month. So we're all just going to have to keep an eye on exactly where DACA is within the court system. And from there, that's when we'll be able to figure out exactly the fate of DACA.
Mm-hmm. In just a moment, we'll talk with two so-called dreamers from Iowa. But broadly speaking, Cassidy, what does this mean for DACA recipients and those who may be thinking of applying?
This means that as of right now, DACA recipients are safe from deportation. They cannot be deported. And right now, from my discussion that I had with an immigration attorney here in Iowa, he says that a lot of the people who are now applying for those initial applications for DACA are actually family members and siblings of current DACA recipients. So as of right now, for families in Iowa, the fact that DACA is being upheld and applications are being accepted, it's really helping out that family unity and keeping siblings and families together at the moment.
Okay. As I mentioned at the outset of the program, if you're affected by DACA's status right now, that it's been fully reinstated, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Well, Cassidy, now that you've walked us through the basics, let's talk with a couple of DACA recipients. Kenya Calderon is with us, as well as Gabby Guerra Cerrone. I hope I had both of your names, an approximation of both of your names. I'm not a Spanish speaker. Kenya and Gabby, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having us. And you did an excellent job with our names.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Kenya, let me start off with you, and I'll have each of you sort of start off in a similar way. Kenya, you first. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and the circumstances that brought you to this country and to our state.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes, I made my journey to the United States in 2005 when I was 11 years old. I was very fortunate, and I say it very fortunate because it's not what we've seen in the last years, to make the journey with my family. We saw many unaccompanied minors a couple of years back that had to make that journey by themselves. And I can't imagine having made that journey at 11 years old all by myself. So I was very fortunate that my parents made that decision for us. I was born and raised in El Salvador. And at that time in early 2000s, the country was experiencing high levels of violence. Our civil war recently took place. I was born right after the peace agreements were made. And mm-hmm. So unfortunately, El Salvador just has been experiencing a great deal of violence for the last decades. And my parents needed to get us out of that space. And so we made the journey. We crossed the border together and came to Iowa because we had family members that were already here. And I've been blessed to call Iowa my home for the last almost 16 years now. I've gone to school here. I'm a graduate of Drake University, and I work. I also exercise in my profession in Iowa as well.
What is it? May I ask, Kenya, your profession is and your degree is what?
Oh, yes. So I graduated 3 years ago with a business degree, and I work for a consulting firm working directly with credit unions across the United States to serve an immigrant Latino population. Mm-hmm. So everything, basically what I do, my passion is to improve the lives of immigrants in the United States. So I also do that through my activism, and now as a professional in a consulting firm.
Gabby, before I get to you, I want to ask Kenya very quickly. We had Cassidy explain what's happened with DACA in the past few weeks and months. What does this mean for you and for your family that DACA has been fully reinstated?
Yes, great question. So my siblings and I, so I have two younger siblings, they're also DACA recipients. And what this means is that when we are good to submit a renewal, that we will get it again for 2 years instead of the 1 year term that the administration had decided this year. It also helps us plan for the future. The last 3 years, it's been a roller coaster of emotion. We've lived with uncertainty as to, are we going to have our DACA status for the next 2 years? Are we not? Should we prepare to what our lives could look like without DACA? Mm-hmm. So it does give us a peace of mind, at least for the next month or so. As Cassidy mentioned, there's another legal battle coming up. So it does give us peace of mind, but the future still remains uncertain for us.
Gabby Guerra-Saron, let me turn to you, also a DACA recipient. Introduce us briefly to you, to your, yourself and the circumstances that mm-hmm. brought you to this country and to this state.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today. So I came to the United States 2001, 2002. I was around 7 years old. And like Kenya, I am from El Salvador, Santa Ana, El Salvador. And during that time, like Kenya mentioned, we were experiencing a lot of violence in our country. And there was a lot of poverty as well. And that still remains. There's a lot of fear for a lot of our family members that still live there. And I was very lucky that my parents made the sacrifices that they needed to make in order to make sure that their daughters were safe. And so we immigrated to the United States following the footsteps of my father, who had been living here for a couple of years. So I was able to move here in 2002, and I've lived all of my life in Iowa, called Des Moines my home. And I actually graduated from North High School. I went on to the University of Iowa at that point and graduated with a ethics and public policy degree and a nonprofit management degree. And now I work for Alexito, which is a current nonprofit, and it's statewide, and we work with Latinx youth. And we're really focusing on building their leadership skills and making sure that they're supported. And right now in our current climate, with so much uncertainty surrounding immigration, education, this is a really important time to support our youth in making sure that they have what they need to succeed.
Mm-hmm. With the latest developments concerning DACA, its full reinstatement, still uncertain future. Gabby, how are you feeling about the current status, your current status and other DACA recipients in the U.S.?
Right. It's a mixture of joy and uncertainty, and it has been that way since it was instated in 2012, right? It's a roller coaster of emotions with so many court cases and then having it reinstated and taken away again. And so it takes a lot from you to be living in that limbo consistently. Right now, I am experiencing some joy for all the youth and all of the new applicants that will be able to be a little bit less stressed about deportation, be able to apply for jobs and get a driver's license, because that will change a lot of lives around the country for so many families, especially living throughout this pandemic. They need that extra help. They need to be able to make money for their families and to feel and be supported. And so I do feel a lot of joy right now for all those new applicants that are going to be able to enjoy that little bit of stress relief.
Yeah, and just to pop in here, Gabby and Kenya, again, thank you for joining us. But so with the new Biden administration coming into Washington, D.C., I'm just curious, and I'm sure Ben is curious as well, but, I mean, are you feeling any hope or any hope that there will be change once Biden takes the office, since he has promised to kind of expand DACA and uphold it? Is that, I mean, what does that mean to you both?
For me, I'm trying to be hopeful. It's really hard to be hopeful once, I can't speak for the entire undocumented community, but, you know, so many promises have been made to the undocumented community for the last two decades that it's hard to believe, but I'm trying to remain hopeful with the new Biden administration. I think I am very certain that the DACA program will continue. I don't know that we will have anything beyond that. I hope so, that we can have something more consistent. I think what we've witnessed as a country during the last 3 years is through these legal battles, it has exposed how vulnerable the DACA program is. And so with such a vulnerable program, it makes DACA recipients vulnerable as well. So I'm very happy that we will have this new administration. I think it'll be easier to work with them. I do think that the program will continue. And as Gabby mentioned, our undocumented youth, they're the ones that bring me joy, because they will be able to benefit from the same program that I benefit since I was 19 years old. And, you know, now I'm 27 years old. So I'm very excited for the doors that will open for them. I don't know that we will have anything beyond that. I hope so. But I have yet to see that come true. Mm-hmm. Gabby, is that how you're feeling too?
Yeah, I would have to agree with Kenny. I am in a similar position where I want to remain hopeful. But again, we have seen so many promises and have not been able to achieve as much beyond the DACA community and the DACA program. But we have to remember that there are so many of us that don't fit under this program that are just as deserving of being free from deportation and being able to have a job and have a driver's license. So I am hopeful that it will be easier to work with the Biden administration, and that level of respect will be there. And I'm hoping that that will turn into some tangible changes in terms of legislation, especially for our parents and our family members who are also in need of the safety as well.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about those who you just mentioned, those who don't fit into this category of DACA recipients, who would not qualify, who you see as needing to be addressed as well.
Yeah. So when I think about DACA, go ahead, Kenya.
No. Go.
I was just going to mention, when I think about DACA, there were a lot of restrictions in terms of dates. And we've heard stories of folks who just didn't meet a certain date in order to apply for DACA. And that's heartbreaking, because some folks just happen to be here a little bit sooner than others, and they just don't get to enjoy those benefits that DACA provides. But then I'm also thinking about the sacrifices that, you know, our parents had to make in order to escape violence and poverty from El Salvador. And very deserving of having these protections, and there's nothing to protect them from that. There's no program that exists, and I want to make sure that we're fighting just as much for all other immigrants and not just DACA recipients.
Okay, we're talking with two young women in their 20s, Kenya Calderon and Gabby Guerra Cerrone, both DACA recipients. Let's go to our phones. Cassidy Arena with us as well. Michaela is with us. Michaela, welcome to the program. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi there. I'm currently calling from Salem, Iowa right now.
Excellent. Are you a DACA recipient, may I ask?
Yes, I am. I have been for almost 8 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Where are you originally from?
I was in Argentina.
Born in Argentina and brought to this country at what age?
I was in kindergarten, so I think like turning 5 or 6, pretty much.
Okay, so we've been hearing from Kenya and Gabby about this roller coaster that DACA's been on. Where are you right now with how you see your status in the U.S. and the latest developments?
Well, I actually am just very blessed to say that I just recently got married, and that is literally the biggest like weight off my shoulders, knowing that I'm on the current path to citizenship. But currently, as it is right now, I only have DACA. And if I didn't have that, I would honestly be just so terrified every single day with, like, this uncertainty of where is my future going to be? You know, I came here at such a young age. Like, this country is all I know. And the fear of someone telling me that I don't deserve to be here, so overwhelming, on top of, like, COVID anxiety and everything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a lot.
Yeah, right. Michaela, do you feel yourself treated differently in this society, even though from a very young age, from kindergarten, as you said, you've grown up here in America? Do you feel treated differently?
So I think to answer this correctly, I would have to say, since I'm very white, I lived a very blessed.
Okay.
And I have blue eyes, American. So I moved here, just accepted me right away, and honestly, I wonder if I was a person of color, maybe I would not have experienced the same life I did, which kind of all comes together with white privilege and all that stuff, because I just bless it.
Okay.
I don't go detected.
Michaela, your cell phone is breaking up a bit. I'm going to ask the sort of the same question to Gabby in Kenya. Gabby, to you, over the years that you've lived in America, practically grown up here from a very early age, do you feel treated differently?
I would say, ever since I was younger in elementary school and middle school, one of the first questions whenever I would meet certain new students or different individuals in the community, that would be one of the questions that I would be asked if I was legal in this country. And to be a seventh grader and to have another student ask you that question is very unnerving. And from that moment on, you have to prepare to decide, okay, where am I safe to talk about this? Where am I safe to not talk about this? And I was only 12 at the time, and I think that was the first time that somebody asked me that question. So I definitely think that you get treated differently when people assume that you don't belong here. So that has been very hard to grow up that way.
Mm-hmm. Kenya, we have a couple minutes before the break, and to say goodbye to you. Comment on that, being treated differently, and what this status change may mean in the future for the Biden administration, possibly.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think I would like to end it with, I think because the DACA program is somewhat elitist, if you think about it, especially when the requirement for education piece is taken into consideration. I personally feel when you look at my profile, when you look at the my level of education, I'm also white passing. I don't think I've faced discrimination as my siblings who are brown have, and we've had those type of conversations, but I do want to make it very important that we have DACA recipients that are parents of U.S. citizens, that have children, that have toddlers, that they get treated different. They have different type of opportunities than the ones that I have because of a college degree. So I think it's very important for our listeners to know that while for many years we've painted this picture that DACA recipients are going to college and getting all of these degrees, that's not always the case, that the majority of DACA recipients are they're regular folks working regular jobs, trying to maintain and provide for their families. It's very hurtful to see when DACA recipients do get treated differently, especially when they have undocumented parents that are subject to abuse and they can't really do anything about it because of their lack of legal status.
Okay, Kenya Calderon, Gabby Guerra-Cerron, thank you very much for joining us, two DACA recipients living here in Iowa. When we come back, we'll address some of the issues that Kenya just brought up with Joe Henry of the League of United Latin American Citizens. Cassidy Arena will be staying with us. We'll talk a little bit more about how undocumented immigrants are fully integrated into work and society.
Iowa Public Radio is fundraising right now, and we could really use your support. The pace of news will not let up, and neither will we. Show your support for this service when you donate now at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you.
So good to have you along on board on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking this hour about what recent court rulings mean for DACA recipients. For the first time in 3 years, people who were brought to the U.S. as young children can apply for a program that would give them protected status. Just days ago, a federal court ordered the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to begin accepting new applications for DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. In the U.S., there are more than 600,000 DACA recipients. Here in Iowa, about 2,500, according to the American Immigration Council. Today, we focus on what these court rulings mean for Iowa's Dreamers, as they're called, and look forward to perhaps what will be happening in terms of immigration policy under the Biden administration. Also with us this half hour, Cassidy Arena, my colleague, IPR reporter, who focuses on Iowa's Latino community. And we're reaching out this hour this half hour, also to you, our listeners. If DACA affects you, are you someone brought to this country as a child and someone who has sought protection from deportation under DACA? We'd like to hear from you what your thoughts are about the current status. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Also with us, joining us this half hour, Joe Enriquez Henry is the state political director with the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC. Joe Henry, welcome back to this program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you along with us. Tell us about your reaction, this latest court ruling a few days old. What's your reaction?
Well, we're thankful. We're thankful that that happened. You know, it should never have been, nothing should have happened to DACA beforehand. So here we are with this opportunity. And of course, now we have over 1.3 million young people who are eligible for the DACA program. Hmm. So this is a great opportunity right now. But moving forward, we need the new Congress to push for comprehensive immigration reform. Immigrants, undocumented immigrants, should not be held hostage. Immigrants play a part in our economy. Immigrants have built our economy, have built our society. We should have the best system in the world for immigration. We don't right now. So we need to move forward. So we're thankful about the ruling. We know that there's going to be a challenge to that at the end of the month. But nonetheless, we are hopeful, and we're hopeful that things will get done in the next administration.
Joe, when you talk about congressional action, talk about the degree to which you see that backed up by attitudes among Americans. We know, at least I've seen some poll results that show that this is an area of consensus among U.S. adults, U.S. citizens. Share what you know about this.
Well, you know, again, we're a country of immigrants. I mean, everybody can trace their history back to when their families came from other countries other than the Native Americans. So we know that the stats show that Americans understand this, and Republicans should understand this in Congress. Here we are here in Iowa. Immigrants have rebuilt the economy here in Iowa. We are an agricultural state. In agriculture, the majority of workers are Latino immigrants who play a critical part, many of which are undocumented. And then when we look at immigrants, I mean, it's clear. Immigrants play a part in agriculture, food processing, which means meat processing, 500,000 workers, service sector, construction, healthcare. Immigrants are not only playing a part of that, but they're also essential workers. And they should not be expendable. So this is clearly a very important time, especially with the new administration coming in. Congress should realize this. The hate mongering that was used against immigrants in this past administration needs to change. We need to acknowledge our history. So we have to move forward. And we know that there'll be many groups across the spectrum that will provide political support to make sure that we have comprehensive immigration reform. We need to have that. 11 million people need to have legal status. Again, we applied with the decision for DACA, but we also have the parents. We have the aunts and uncles. We have mixed status families. They cannot be forgotten. They are playing a role in our society.
Cassidy Arena, do you have a question for Joe Henry of LULAC?
Actually, I do, especially, Joe, with your history and your work with the Latino community here in Iowa. I mean, what sort of effect does it have on all of these immigrants and all of these DACA recipients who are constantly, like our guests in the past half hour were saying, a roller coaster of back and forth? What sort of effect does this have on the mentality of the Latino immigrant and DACA recipient community here in Iowa?
Well, clearly now we have hope. We have renewed hope. For many years now, especially in this current administration, we have dealt with fear, with hate mongering. People have been forced into the shadows. Now we have this glimmer of opportunity that needs to happen. It is our right. It is the right of all Americans, documented, undocumented, to really have this opportunity to have legal status, to be U.S., to be their right to be U.S. citizens. So it has been a tough road, a very tough road. But now we need to move forward. We need those who support comprehensive immigration reform to push forward, to remind Congress to do their job. And we have heard very positive things from the incoming administration about what they plan on doing. But really, now we have renewed hope. So we are thankful for what has happened so far.
Mm-hmm. I'll share a little bit of what the latest Pew survey on this reveals about Americans, citizens' attitudes about DACA recipients. This is from June of 2020. About three-quarters of U.S. adults say they favor granting permanent legal status to immigrants who came illegally to the U.S. when they were children. In fact, in this same survey, Americans also expressed support for finding a way for all undocumented immigrants, not just those who were brought to the country as children, to stay in the U.S. Legally. So, Joe, when we have, of course, there's a partisan split there. Democrats overwhelmingly in favor of what I just mentioned, a majority, but a slimmer majority of Republicans in favor of this. I think 89% to 57% when we look at it through a partisan lens. What do you see as the challenge? The challenges, Joe, to getting something enacted in Congress, comprehensive immigration overhaul in a bipartisan fashion, so that it's something more permanent for the undocumented immigrants and a path to citizenship, which these polls seem to indicate most Americans are in favor of.
Well, you know, clearly we have to get over the hate mongering, and I think that this election showed that heat mongering is not going to work with Americans. Congress needs to act. This push for comprehensive immigration reform has been something that our community has really worked hard on for the last 13 to 14 years. Elected leaders need to listen to their constituents, to the majority of Americans, as you have noted, understand the need for comprehensive immigration reform, for legal status. In many communities, you know, people see the work that is done by immigrants. They understand it. They understand their own history. So we have to take this out of politics. We have to talk about the reality, about how immigrants fuel the economy of America, how it has worked here in Iowa. Even when we've spoken with Grassley's office, in Ernst's office over the last 8 years, they understand that there needs to be comprehensive immigration reform. They need to push, but now they need to push for it more than ever. Americans have voted. They have made the decision which way to go here in our country, and now is the time for comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah, exactly. And Joe, just to give our listeners a little a sense of exactly how DACA recipients are doing right now, you know, like we talked about, not everybody qualifies to be a DACA recipient. So what is the current status? What is it like to be an immigrant or to be a DACA recipient right now in Iowa? I mean, what are they going through right now?
Yeah, well, good question. So it is a challenge. I mean, to be a DACA recipient or to be eligible for a DACA recipient, you would have had to have been born after June 15th, 1981. You also have to make sure that you don't violate the law, you know, misdemeanors, minor felonies. I mean, those are still issues that you have to deal with. And now you have the application process to renew, which will cost per applicant about $495 per applicant. And the renewal process starts now. And there will be those who are eligible who might not be able to afford the fee in order to enroll. So, you know, different groups are providing funding right now. We're going to post it on our LULAC Iowa website here. United We Dream is another organization that's been a main organization that will promote providing grants to help these young people enroll. But again, as is mentioned by the people that you just had on, the Dreamers, I mean, this has been a difficult process. It's been a roller coaster. The amount of time to be a DACA recipient was brought down to a year. Now we're going to go back to 2 years. But now the enrollment has to happen, and they still have to deal with if any criminal record that might have occurred during their time, that's going to be held against them. And again, you know, they're living in families that their parents are still, many of the parents are still undocumented, or aunts and uncles, or brothers and sisters. So it's still very chaotic, and that's, again, why we need to move forward from here, make sure that anyone who is eligible enrolls, gets on the website like United to Dream. There's actually going to be some tutorials that are going to go on starting tonight through United We Dream. So a lot of information is getting out there, but lots of discussions. What do we do next? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how these families can provide, get the support that they need to move forward. And then from here, make sure that we have legislation enacted this coming year.
Joe, just to make sure our listeners have the correct website, United We Dream, is that the website, or do we need any
correct.
More specific?
Yeah, okay. UnitedWeDream.org.
Okay.
Just
look for that.
Yeah, that's a very important website, and there's others, and of course, many young people can Google this information, but it's important for them to find out and check with their friends and family members.
Okay, Joe, you mentioned that over a million people in the U.S. are eligible for DACA, but as I mentioned, there are currently something over 600,000 DACA recipients. So as of a few days
correct.
Ago, people can apply, make a new application to be a DACA recipient. From what you can tell there at LULAC, what are the people considering this, you know, well over 600,000 people who are eligible but not yet DACA recipients? What are the most common questions they have about whether they should apply or how they should apply?
Well, good question. There are going to be questions, and that's why it's so important for as much information to be put out there on social media, in the news, through different nonprofits, to really help young people who are eligible for DACA to understand how the process works and the possibility for getting funding for those applications, because $495 is still a large amount of money for a family, for a working class family. So getting that help, getting those tutorials, those mentors, we have a lot of DACA recipients or new applicants who might check in with an attorney. But again, they can do this on the web mm-hmm. if they have access to internet at home, or checking with us in LULAC, United We Dream. Dream Iowa is another organization here in Iowa, headed by Monica Reyes. It's a very good organization to check with. But the eligibility, we need to communicate that. We need to know that they have that right, that opportunity. It is their right to have that legal status through the application process. And we have to really amplify that message from here on out.
I hear what you're saying, Joe, that money, having the necessary money to apply as a DACA recipient is one possible barrier. But I'm wondering if, you know, this is sort of simply put, coming out of the shadows to register with the government, perhaps for the first time, don't these potential DACA recipients have that as a bit of a concern to be documented, perhaps come out of the shadows in this way, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there is a legal issue, and that's in regards to that. We would also encourage them to check with attorneys on this to make sure that if any documents were utilized before coming out of the shadows, that they should check with attorneys to make sure that everything is accurate, that there might be something that should or should not be noted when they do that application process.
Okay,
and that's why the tutorials on United We.
Get legal advice. That's your message coming through.
Legal advice is a key element, yes.
Okay. About 5 minutes of our conversation with Joe Henry of LULAC. Cassidy, what's on your mind still as we close this hour talking about DACA status?
Right now, it's basically, I'm definitely picking up on Joe's vibes here with that even though DACA is officially reinstated for now, that does not necessarily mean that it's all in the clear. There's still a lot of questions like Joe just laid out for us. There's still a lot of uncertainty. So as of right now, I do agree with Joe that anybody who is thinking about applying for DACA, that is open to them now. They can apply, and there are resources around Iowa, great resources that are at their disposal.
Mm-hmm. Joe, you mentioned how many undocumented immigrants work in our ag sector across the country and, of course, here in Iowa. When you look at agriculture, of course, many rural people, farmers, have conservative beliefs in that Pew survey would mean they're less likely to support all undocumented immigrants finding a way for their citizenship. How do you square those two? Farmers tend to have conservative beliefs, but they also tend to rely on undocumented immigrants for labor.
I know, and we have difficulty with this way that they have viewed things. They need immigrant labor, most of which are undocumented. These people are working for them. These people are taking care of the fields, taking care of the cows. They are processing the meat. Do they not understand that these people should have legal status, should have the right to be citizens, should not be treated as slaves? So we would try to really encourage them to their better angels, to really move forward on this issue, that every person in the United States has the right to become a U.S. citizen, definitely has the right to have legal status, especially if they're paying them for their labor. So it makes sense to us, should make sense to them, and that's why we need to have more discussions from the dairy farmers to the farmers who plant the fields, to the livestock farmers, to the meat processing facilities. 26,000 workers in Iowa work at the 20-some meat processing facilities across the state, playing a key role, essential work, should be treated with the right to have legal status. Again, in the fields, in agriculture, building the roads, building new construction, serving food. It is the right thing to do. It's part of our history here in Iowa. Mm-hmm. So we should move forward, and they should acknowledge their history and the people who work for them.
Joe, in the final minute we have, what would be, in your mind, a realistic permanent solution from Congress, perhaps the coming Congress? Also politically realistic, I guess, is what I'm asking for we have 1 minute.
Right. I mean, really quick. I mean, people who work here in the United States should have legal status. We have 70 million people who travel to the United States every year without a problem. We have a very sophisticated system for that. But we don't have it for people who work here. And we need to make sure that that happens. We have some of it, but not all of it. We are a country built by immigrants. Therefore, we should have a system that is sophisticated, that acknowledges the right of people to work and have legal status at the same time with a pathway to citizenship. It makes sense. That's the right thing to do. We need to do it.
Okay. Perhaps I can turn to you, Cassidy Arena, in the final few seconds here to wrap up this hour. We look forward to your coverage of this and other Latino community issues here. What's on your mind as we end this hour, Cassidy?
Oh, yeah. Well, that is one thing you can look forward to. I'm definitely going to stay focused on this subject, at least for a while now, while it's still kind of going through the court system. But one thing that I do want to jump off of, Joe, really fast, is the economic benefit that the state can have by starting to accept new DACA applications is that the more people who have DACA, they actually have legal employment rights. So, you know, talking to immigration attorneys around, it not only helps the DACA recipients and the people who would benefit from the DACA program themselves, but economically, it'll put the state in also a better status. So, you know, it's kind of a, it can definitely be a benefit for both sides. And I just wanted to kind of sum up Joe's economic comments as far as where it will affect the state.
We have to go. Cassidy Arena, IPR reporter Joe Henry of the League of United Latin American Citizens, the state political director. Joe and Cassidy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Ben Kiefer. This has been River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.